TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Victoria Nuland resigns. Glenn Greenwald and Ray McGovern comment. Nuland was Under Secretary of State for Political Affairs, the third highest ranking U.S. diplomat position. The Hill is a source for policy and political news. Glenn Greenwald was interviewed on their news commentary show, Rising. Glenn Greenwald is an American journalist, author, and former lawyer. He became a vocal critic of the Iraq War and American foreign policy. In 2014, he co-founded The Intercept and was the editor until he resigned in October 2020. Greenwald is now self-publishing on Substack. Here's Glenn Greenwald.
She was Dick Cheney's top advisor in the White House in 2003 and for the next several years for counseling him on how to implement the invasion of Iraq and then how to maintain the occupation of Iraq. And we're supposed to regard, I thought, the Iraq War as some kind of grave at best mistake, if not moral crime, the worst war of the last generation. And yet the people responsible, which certainly includes Victoria Nuland, this has all been forgotten. And then from there, she just continued to implement classical neoconservative policies, not just wanting to confront Russia, but most other countries in the world. And she's part of this neocon circle that liberals just 15 years ago used to describe as warmongering and psychotic. And yet she served very comfortably under the Obama administration with both John Kerry and Hillary Clinton, and then ran Ukraine for both Obama and now Biden. I think a lot of people have forgotten this part of history, that during the Obama administration, Obama was reluctant to confront Russia. He didn't want to send lethal arms to Ukraine. He didn't want to confront Russia over Syria. He didn't think Syria or Ukraine was worth risking a war with Russia. But part of the State Department, led by Hillary Clinton, was extremely hawkish in pushing Obama to do more to confront Russia. And Hillary and Victoria Nuland were very much part of that. When Hillary wrote her book, the one place she was most critical of Obama was on his refusal to confront Russia more. And she led the way. And what you can basically trace this current war in Ukraine to was the 2014 U.S.-supported attempt, and you can argue about how much the U.S. was involved, but they were certainly supportive openly of the coup against the then-elected president of Ukraine, who was elected in 2010, was supposed to serve a five-year office, but he was removed in 2014 when the U.S. and the EU perceived him as being too comfortable with Moscow. And Victoria Nuland went there. She gave cupcakes and donuts to the people outside the palace trying to remove him from power. And that was a key event in what led to the war in Ukraine. And then she got caught on a tape-recorded conversation that they claim the Russians hacked and released. But whoever it was certainly an authentic call where she was plotting with the then U.S. ambassador to Ukraine over exactly which people the U.S. wanted to take which positions in the Ukrainian government once this elected president was removed. And then after that coup was effectuated, exactly the people that she directed be put into government ended up ruling Ukraine. When I started writing about politics, Robbie, it was late 2005, in the middle of the war on terror. A consensus emerged among liberals then that neocons were the single worst faction in American political life. Bill Kristol and Paul Wolfowitz, all these people that brought in Guantanamo and torture and the invasion of Iraq and, the attempt to move that to Iran. And she was not only, counseling that, but she was also the UN ambassador to NATO that led the way with Condoleezza Rice under Bush in trying to expand NATO up to the Russian border to include Ukraine, which was, again, probably the initial act that led us to where we are in Ukraine. Now, 15 years later, you won't see a single mainstream Democrat or liberal agreeing with you that Victoria Nuland is that. And that's because, like most neocons, she has aligned herself with the Democratic Party. She served, again, comfortably in the Obama administration. She wasn't a civil servant. She was a political appointee. And then again, in the Biden administration, where she rose to the top highest level of the State Department. So these kinds of people who 10 years ago were considered evil by American liberals and the left are now integrated into the Democratic Party along with the broader neoconservative movement. And that's not because they changed. It's because the politics of each party did. She goes back to all the way back to Clinton. So she has served in the State Department in every administration from Clinton to Biden, except for the 4 years when Donald Trump was president. That was the only time she was out of government. And again, she started as a civil servant, but the more you go up the ranks, they become political appointees. You have to be appointed by the president, sometimes confirmed by the Senate. So after the Clinton years, she was a real closely held advisor and official of George Bush, of Barack Obama, of Joe Biden, of Dick Cheney. These people that were told can't agree on anything use the same people to implement their foreign policy. Why is that? Because they have largely the same foreign policy, and that doesn't change no matter who you vote for. And I think that's what makes Victoria Nuland so illustrative.
You heard brief excerpts of Glenn Greenwald's comments on Victoria Nuland's resignation, recorded on the podcast Rising on March 6, 2024. 5 days after the Greenwald interview, the former CIA analyst Ray McGovern speculated that political differences between Nuland and Biden administration officials may have led to her surprise ouster. Here are excerpts from a 53-minute interview entitled "Nuland's Game is Up as Russia Smashes Ukraine's Army," recorded by Nima on the channel Dialogue Works. Ray McGovern served as a CIA analyst for 27 years, from the administration of John F. Kennedy to that of George H.W. Bush. Here's Ray McGovern.
Ray, when you look at Nuland's departure, you find it a resignation or a firing? Because it's a huge difference if it's a resignation or a firing. It has totally different meanings for the conflict in Ukraine.
You're quite right. Now, given the sparse information available, this has to be speculative. But I don't think it was her health. And I don't think she got tired. Neocons don't get tired. I think she was fired. Now, again, this is pretty circumstantial, but it always helps to do a chronology. What was the last significant thing she did? Well, she appeared in Kiev about 3 weeks ago, if memory serves, and she refereed a dispute between Zaluzhny and Zelensky and Sirsky and Budanov, and she said, "All right, Zaluzhny, you're out. Understand that? Zelensky, you're still our man. Everybody got that? Okay. And Sirsky, why don't you come in and be the commander in chief?" Now, am I making this up? Nuland was responsible for this whole mess starting 10 years ago, for God's sake, 2014. Which the coup that she sponsored, and if you don't believe me, just listen to the intercepted conversation between her and the U.S. ambassador in Kiev. Get this, folks, 2.5 weeks before the coup. What are you saying, McGovern? Yeah, it was like YouTube. The intercepted conversation was on YouTube on March the 4th, 2014. Putin and many other circumspect advisors like me thought, well, the coup is blown, for God's sake. These poor guys, these guys were named by name, the people who are going to be running, like Yatsenyuk, you know, going to be running the government. They're out of a job. They'll have to go to their villas in Italy. Too bad. And, you know, what's the evidence for this? Well, the Winter Olympics were on in Sochi. And Putin didn't even bother to come home, for God's sake. He stayed there and he came back the day after the coup. We know the rest of that story. So she's responsible for all this stuff. Now, is she going to relent? Well, relent isn't in the vocabulary of neoconservative states people, okay? Now, what did she do there 3 weeks ago? She appointed a guy who has a terrible reputation as an army commander, Sirsky, who sacrificed upwards of 100,000 troops trying to take Bakhmut in vain. That fell in May of last year. And now Avdiivka, the same, falling just 2 weeks ago. And so she's trying to salvage this situation. So after she does her rearranging of the government in Kiev, and for a modest respect for the opinions of mankind made it possible for Zelensky to defer the firing of Zelensky for 2 or 3 days. Okay, but he did it. And where's Zelensky now? Oh, he's got a sinecure. He's in London. He's the new Ukrainian ambassador in London. Isn't that great? So who's winning the war? Sirsky was the first thing he did. He sent a whole bunch of crackerjack troops to help the Ukrainians defending Avdiivka, and they got massacred because Sirsky forgot that the Russians from above see everything that goes on, and any group bigger than 10 gets massacred by drones or some other way. So Sirsky is a no-brainer either. So what's Nuland say? Well, she doesn't say much in public. Normally there's some kind of a press conference or something while she's there, but that didn't happen. Instead, she had some of her people videotape her. It's the lighting is lousy. She looks not so good. And she says, Mr. Putin, be prepared for a big surprise on the battlefield. Her words, okay? So what's that big surprise all about? Everybody else is out of ammunition. There are only a limited amount of these longer range missiles given by Britain and by France. And the Germans have an equivalent. It's called a Taurus, okay? The Taurus missile. So the Germans are under pressure to provide those, lest the UK and France seem to be more ardent, more loyal allies to the US than the Germans. Now, Scholz, Olaf Scholz, whatever his other actions, he has been reluctant to give these longer range missiles, these Taurus, to Ukraine. Why? Because they can strike Russia. And what do we have in an intercepted conversation on the 19th of February, but the highest Air Force, Luftwaffe generals talking about, okay, now, how are we going to explain the Taurus to Defense Minister Pistorius? Now, Pistorius has asked us to give a briefing on the Taurus, and we're a little confused. Does he want to use the Taurus to strike the Crimean Bridge there, the Kerch Bridge, or ammo dumps further into Russia? What does he want? And, and this is telling. One of the chief generals says, you know, it's not going to change anything. It's certainly not going to change the course of the war. It's all politics. His words. Okay. So what's the story here? That was intercepted on the 19th of February. Okay. The general or the person in Singapore who was in on this call used an easily hackable link. Okay. So the Russians got it. Do I think they got it all by themselves? Probably. Or maybe the Singaporeans sold it to them. The Singaporeans don't want a wider war in Europe or in Asia. Or, well, not or. And the NSA. Why does nobody mention this? The NSA has that intercept. When did they get it? Not from the Russians. They got it on the 19th of February. Now, we have the intercept, right? But we don't have the full intercept. What else did these German generals say? Why is Pistorius asking for a briefing on this missile that his boss, Olaf Scholz, said, no, we're not going to get the Ukraine? Could it be that Victoria Nuland is maneuvering behind the backs of our own people, working with Pistorius, working with the Luftwaffe? She's got very good contacts to make sure that this would be a surprise to Mr. Putin and her warning would be exercised. A lot of pressure put on Pistorius, a lot of pressure put on Olaf Scholz, okay? By whom? By the Americans. So, now, if NSA intercepted that. And I know enough about their capability from years and from knowing two former technical directors of NSA who are with our group, Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. I know the capability. It would have been a piece of cake to intercept that. They intercept everything. The important things, they translate right away. I think it's a done deal that the Americans had that on the 19th of February. And if, and this is a big if, this is speculative, if it showed that Victoria Nuland was behind Pistorius, who was a rival of Olaf Scholz, and Pistorius is trying to get these Taurus missiles approved for use in Ukraine against Russia proper, that's a bridge too far, so to speak, okay? A bridge too far. In other words, she was exceeding what Biden and his advisors, Blinken, her boss, her nominal boss, or it's going to say Defense Secretary Austin. But remember, where was he during all this? Oh, yeah, he was in a hospital. He was in a hospital for the first couple of weeks of January, and then he went back in the beginning of February. And then he worked from home. You know, if you want to do an end run around a guy like Austin, well, you have to have a big perimeter, but you can do it real easy if he's not feeling up to it. And if, as I suspect, he was not willing to challenge the policymakers. So what's the bottom line here? Bottom line for me is that she was cashiered for cause. There are hints even in the flowery valedictory that Blinken gave for her, there are hints that she's responsible for everything that's happened in Ukraine. Well, oh God, another year or so, and that's not going to be a panegyric. That's not going to be a compliment. That's going to be something that won't even get you a job in George Washington University at that point, maybe. So that's how I read Victoria Nuland. Now, what does that mean? That means that maybe the real military, and I'm not talking about Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, I'm talking about people like the Army Chief of Staff. His name is General Randy George. How many stars does he have? Four of them. Look at him right there. Now, what did he say last week? He said, you know, the worst mistake we could make is to underestimate the Russians. They're very powerful. They have not been hurt by economic sanctions. They've rebuilt their economy and their ability to create the arms that they need. That would be a bad mistake to underestimate the Russians. Whoa! Now, that was last week. But that jars because the head of the CIA on the 7th of July last year said the Russians have already suffered a strategic defeat. The incapability of the Russian armed forces has been laid bare for all to see. His name, William Burns, he said that on the 7th of July last year, and 6 days later, the president, President Biden, in his wisdom said, Mr. Putin has already lost in Ukraine. Oh, wait a second now. Already lost? Well, who told him that? Well, I guess it was William Burns told him that. And now finally, the armed services who know something about war and don't want to get involved in an unnecessary war with Russia are speaking up and saying, look, you know, we know speculation. We know what Victoria Nuland was doing. We don't want to hit Russia proper. We don't want to use these German Taurus missiles to knock down the Crimean Bridge. We don't care what anybody says, even wise men like Robert M. Gates. He was defense secretary not only under Bush, but he sloughed over under Obama. And he was so wise, you know, that he did the surge into Iraq, when even Secretary Rumsfeld, mind you, was going wobbly and saying, President Bush, Cheney, we better change our plans. Not working in Iraq. Who did they get Bobby in? Bobby Gates in with David Petraeus and surged into Iraq, 20,000 more troops. And what's that? One-fifth of them dead, almost 1,000. And then, of course, he surged, blessed the surge, motivated the surge into Afghanistan. We know how that came out. Tens and tens and tens and thousands more people, more than 2,000 U.S. troops killed. And then he had the temerity to say, get this, folks, the temerity to say on his way out with an address to the West Point cadets, he said, now, 700 of your former colleagues have fallen on the field of battle, and I feel personally responsible for each and every one of them, as though they were my sons. And, you know, if I were to give advice to the President of the United States, I would repeat what General Douglas MacArthur said. Anybody who advises you, Mr. President, to get into a major land war in Asia should have his head examined. And he walks out and nobody sees the discrepancy. Anyhow, he's an incidental player in the current situation. Why? Because he gave an interview to his best friend forever. That's David Ignatius, who's Gates' and CIA's spokesperson at the Washington Post. And what Gates says, look, you know, the reason we're losing is we've been too slow in giving heavy arms to Ukraine. We got to surge that. We got to approve this new tranche of weaponry. We got to hit Crimea. And we got to, quote, drop that Kerch bridge, end quote. And when did he say that? He said that about 3 weeks ago. At the same time, all this other stuff is going on, okay? All this other stuff. Oh, including these Air Force, senior Air Force Luftwaffe people, saying, yeah, we might have to, are we going to hit the Kerch Bridge or are we going to hit the ammo depots? Pistorius wants a briefing on this. Well, okay. Now, that's not conclusive, but that's how I put this thing together. And I think the bottom line for me here, Nima, is, as I hinted before, as long as I'm feeling, you'd be a better judge of this, I'm feeling compos mentis, I'm going to give you a little history because, you know, there are direct comparisons with some history that I know personally because I was involved in it, had to do with war, okay? Vietnam War, to be precise. And, you know, history doesn't always repeat itself, Nima, but it does rhyme, okay? History does rhyme. Would you be amenable to my taking you through a scenario that existed, my God, it existed exactly 56 years ago today, March the 9th, 1968. Now, most of your audience wasn't even born then, but I was the Soviet foreign policy analyst for Vietnam at the time. I also covered Soviet attitudes toward China. That was a big issue. Japan and Vietnam, Southeast Asia. So as I looked at all this business about how we're going to prevail in Vietnam, I began to have, you know, I was a cold warrior, I admit it, mea culpa. But as I began to see the equities here and the fact that LBJ in particular, Lyndon Johnson, was being advised by a bunch of, well, they call them the best and the brightest because they came from the best schools and they were the brightest people around, right? Okay. So among them was a former ambassador to the Soviet Union. His name was Averill Harriman. Now, he was big deal, right? He's a big deal. So what does he say? LBJ, not to worry, not to worry. In the final analysis, we'll get Russia will get the Soviet Union to use its influence in Hanoi and pull your chestnuts out of the fire. That's what's going to happen. now McGovern, having been in the job 3 or 4 years and having realized the history of this thing, namely that in 1954, when Ho Chi Minh had won hands down, the Russians at Geneva Conference 1954, sold Ho Chi Minh and the Vietnamese communists down the river. And so, you know, I'd say, well, now, how's that going to work here? How's that going to work, Harriman? Have you forgot about that? Well, apparently you forgot about that. See, when you're the best and the brightest and you're very distinguished, you could just do things. The character flaw is called hubris. What do we have here? Well, McGovern is so frustrated. He's writing these things. Hey, LBJ, guess what? Russia doesn't have any influence. And besides, they're completely mystified as to why you're pouring hundreds of thousands of troops into Vietnam, where they're convinced you're not going to win. Now, it is the same thing happening right now in Ukraine. So what's my little codicil here? For God's sake, there are people who know what the plans are for Ukraine. Not only what Victoria Nuland hoped would happen, but what the Germans, the French, Macron, what the British are prepared to do not to lose the war before Biden has a chance to win the election. Those people who know these secrets should do what I've heard Dan Ellsberg say so many times from the first time I met him right before the war in Iraq. Don't do what I did. Don't wait. Summon the courage to do something for the rest of the world and prevent the worst from happening. The worst now being the use of little mini nukes to stave off a full defeat in Ukraine. And do I say that blithely? No. I say that with great trepidation, because I think these people advising Biden are capable of anything to preserve their chance to win the election and stay in power and not end up in jail.
You heard excerpts from a 53-minute interview of Ray McGovern on the channel Dialogue Works. The date was March 11, 2024, 6 days after the U.S. Department of State announced Victoria Nuland's resignation. In early March 2024, Ray McGovern is warning that intelligence might be falsified today to justify war on Russia. You heard comments by Glenn Greenwald and Ray McGovern on the resignation of Victoria Nuland. A search for both speakers on YouTube for the time period of March 5 to 11, 2024 will lead you to the channels for Rising and Dialogue Works for the full video recordings of the interviews.
You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.